All right, please call the case.
Case number SCWC-30485, Berea v. Association of Apartment Owners of Pacific Monarch, Incorporated. Arguing for the petitioner, George W. Van Buren. Also appearing for the petitioner, John B. Shimizu. Arguing for the respondent, Matt A. Tsukuzaki.
Good afternoon, Counselor. Are you all ready to proceed today?
Yes.
Yeah? Mr. Tsukuzaki. Okay, and my understanding is that we've divided up the time as follows. Mr. Van Buren, you'll begin with 20 minutes in support of your application. Mr. Tsukuzaki, you'll then have 23 minutes to respond, and also in support of your own or the respondent's application or the AOAO's application. Then we'll hear from Mr. Van Buren in reply in support of your own application in response to the AOAO, and then finally we'll hear last from Mr. Tsukuzaki in reply in supporting your application. So that was about as complicated as I could make it. But just to make it any more complicated, we'll have yellow lights that'll go on when your initial periods of time have expired, and then at the end all you'll see is a red light when your time is up. So I guess I'd say keep track of where you are as you go to the best of your ability. So Mr. Van Buren, please get us started today.
May it please the court. It is easy to see in this case why the trial court had to find that an offer was made by the association and why the ICA had to find that there wasn't one. The minutes from the meeting to amend the condominium documents reflect that the association's attorney stated that, quote, the fee would first be offered to all the owners, and after the amendments, owners will still have to approve the purchase of the lease fee interest, and individual owners can still decide not to purchase their interest when it is offered to them by the AOAO. That is a direct quote from the minutes at the meeting to approve the amendments. The declaration was then amended to state that all rights of the lessor, the ground lessor at that point, are null and void except in the case of those lessees who do not purchase the least fee interest in the land. It doesn't say except in the case of those lessees who are not offered purchase the land. It says those lessees who do not purchase the lease fee interest in the land. The bylaws were amended to state that the lessees in the apartment and or commercial units in the project who do not purchase the lease fee interest in the land will negotiate directly with the lessors, successors, and assigns. And further, quote, the acquisition shall be ratified by at least 75% of the owners. Goes on to state the off-quoted language in the briefs that in Article 3, Section 2, Number 5, the association is empowered, quote, to sell the lease fee interest in the land involving the apartment or commercial units, first to the lessee of the appurtenant apartment or commercial unit, and if the lease fee interest is unsold, then to any interested lessee in the AOAO or other interested third party by any equitable method.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Van Buren, but you're making the point that the Condominium Association clearly had the power to be able to purchase on behalf, in a sense, of the tenants the fee, and that the purpose of the amendment to the bylaws was to move that process forward, right?
Yes, that's correct. To move that process forward, and the process involved first there was the amendment, and then the amendment required a 75% ratification then by the owners in order for the association to purchase the fee and then sell it to the individual owners.
And in order to follow through with that particular provision, they did get the 75%
agreement.
They did
get the 75%,
correct.
Yes.
And I am assuming that your focus is on the argument as to whether there was actually a contract entered into as part of that process, but a contract entered into between the Furuyas and AOAO at the time that the DROA was sent to the Furuyas. Is that correct?
Yes, but my argument is twofold. That's part of my argument. And the second part of the argument is that to the extent that a contract wasn't entered into, the association was required to offer the lease fee to the apartment owners, which would be the Furuyas.
And at what price?
That's a good question. what happened in this case was the association, I believe, made a mistake when they offered the interest. They divided it up for the Ferrullias. The Ferrullias had two apartments. They had 3206 and 3207. Appurtenant to unit 3206.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Was the parking stalls.
Right.
So there were not three lease fee interests. There were only two. Now, when the association set up three prices, even though there were only two lease fee interests. Now, when it was sent to Mr. Ferrullia, the documents that were sent reflected those three lease fee interests, even though there were only two.
And you're saying that because of Exhibit A to the DROA that listed in separately the cost of the parking stall?
That's correct. They
how did they get to that price?
I don't know how they came to that price. They got an appraisal.
With respect to 3207, was it the 5.whatever% that, did they get the entire leased fee from the owner? Did the association buy everything at a certain price?
I believe so. That what they did is they took the lease fee price, the price for the lease fee that they were paying, and then they divided among the common interest. But then,
right. So knowing that they might have to retain some of it, keep some of it, or did they only buy the ones that for the people that said that they were interested?
No, they bought. They purchased the entire. Okay. The association purchased the entire fee.
And then they divided it into the 5.whatever% it was for each unit.
That's what they should have done. However, what they did was that I believe, and I'm not positive of this, but I believe what they did was they took, let's just say it was $10 million.
Right.
And they reduced it, I think, by the $400,000 for the parking
which interest.
Which is incorrect, because they had no lease fee interest. The parking can't have any lease fee interest. And then they divided the remainder among 100% of the apartments. So the 100% did not total the $10 million. Now, I'm not positive of that, but that's my understanding, that the 100% would have equaled in my example about 940,000.
I want to be sure everyone here can hear. Is everyone here able to hear what we're saying? So please, I'll ask everyone to speak into their mics, and if we need to take the sound volume up a little bit, please do.
But the DROA, when the association sent you the DROA, it was not signed, correct? By the association.
That's correct. Yeah.
And it doesn't even mention, the front of it, it says 3206. It references nothing, apparently, about the parking. I mean, we have to go to the Exhibit A, right?
That's correct.
And we have to, even though it says to determine your purchase price for your unit, use only the last two digits, and that would not have given actually the price for the parking stalls.
That's correct.
So, and that's the document that you believe was accepted by your client.
Well, that document was sent to my client, and he signed that and sent it back to them. They receipted for that document. It was accepted by title guarantee. Escrow was opened, and a deposit was made.
And then according to the circuit court, which heard the trial evidence, basically found you guys weren't, that you guys changed your mind.
No, I don't believe that's correct. What the circuit court found, the key thing that the circuit court found was that an offer was made, that they made an offer. And the intermediate court said that finding was clearly erroneous, that the association had never made an offer. The association maintained throughout the trial and throughout the appeal that DROA was never signed by the association. It was only signed by the Ferrullias. So they say, oh, you didn't close.
No, I understand with the ICA, but I'm reading from the findings of the court. It said, well before the December 9th, 1996 closing date, Clarence Ferruglia informed the AOAO board members and its lease-to-fee conversion consultant, Cesar Payette, that the Ferruglias no longer wanted to acquire the lease fee interest to the 106 parking stalls.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there are two things wrong with that. I think that adds with the fact. There's the letter from the association's lawyer that said the reason it didn't close is because the association realized that the 106 parking stalls were appurtenant at 306, and that's why the association refused to close. The second thing is that finding makes absolutely no sense because there was no lease fee interest to the parking.
Well, they're referring, I think, to the fee interest, and the letters from the I saw a couple of letters that seemed to, even the findings quote a letter that was written. It says the owner, it says since the AOAO purchased the fee interest, the owner of the 106 parking stalls has decided not to purchase this fee interest from the AOAO. That's from the board president, January 14, 1997.
I can quote from that if you want me to. That's a self-serving and incorrect statement by the board president.
So that even though this is very, very close to the date it was supposed to close, this is a self-serving, and the court found, relied on this, and essentially did not find your client particularly credible about several things.
Well, there is the statement in there that he wasn't found credible, but I would be remiss in not telling you that there was a lot of confusion by the trial court on these points, particularly the problem with this lease fee interest to the parking. They kept on talking about it as if there were two fees. There was a lease fee interest for 3206. There was a lease fee interest to 3207. There was no lease fee interest to the parking. The DROA in question, as you point out, was for the lease fee interest in 3206.
Well, let me see if we can focus on that for a moment, because I think Justice Pollack is rightfully concerned about the manner in which the DROA would be interpreted, looking at the totality of the circumstances here. And when you look at this process that was anticipated, it appears that there was a mass mailing of the DROA. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yes.
And it was mailed to the tenants. They all received the DROA. And Exhibit A was included so the tenants could sort of pick which of their units was covered, right?
That's correct.
And in Exhibit A, you have different levels of units, A, B. Then there are the commercial units. And the DROA anticipates that the tenant will then sign and identify, sign the DROA and identify which of these categories applies to them, correct?
Correct.
All right. So in making a determination about whether or not there was a meeting of the minds or what was anticipated by the tenant who received this, and Mr. Ferruglia was one of those tenants, right? Received it.
He was.
Then the process included picking the particular unit. In this case, we had 3206, 3207, so presumably there would have been a DROA for each of those, and is that right?
That's correct.
And he picked it. And
he picked
and
it.
All the other tenants did too.
Well, not all of them, but those that chose to purchase.
Loosely speaking, that was the process. A
yes.
mass of tenants did.
Yes.
But also in looking at Exhibit A, you have the parking stalls listed. Presumably, the purpose of listing the parking stall was for, I suppose, the individual.
I'm just going to interrupt. I'm going to ask, I want to be sure everyone here can hear. Is there anyone who's having a hard time hearing? You are, sir. Is there any way, I'm going to ask my colleagues to, again, please speak into your microphone, Justice Wilson, maybe pull it a bit closer, and if there's anything we need to do to raise the volume a little more, I realize we might get feedback, but I want to be sure that everyone here can hear these proceedings, and if you're not able to hear, please just approach the bailiff and let him know. If need be, we can take a break, and we'll make accommodations to be sure that you can hear. So please don't hesitate to do that, okay, to everyone here. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'll keep looking at the bailiff just in case I need a signal. Can't hear me.
Well, again, it's not what he's recording. It's what people are hearing out in the audience. So I think the back of the room may be a little bit quieter.
Thank you. But I just was trying to make sure that this process was understood, that essentially there was no further negotiation anticipated. What was happening is each of the tenants received this particular DROA, and then they made a determination. They signed it to indicate that essentially they were purchasing their fee at the conditions that had been included in the DROA and Exhibit A, right?
That's
so with that said, was there a separate DROA for 459, for the $459,000 for the 106 parking stalls?
No, he was only sent the two DROAs.
Okay, so when Mr. Ferruglia received this, what did this represent from your point of view in terms of what was being offered, or if you will?
That represented the fee, the lease fee interest for 3206, which I point out is the lease fee interest for 3207 and the lease fee interest of 3206 were the only lease fee interests there were.
So when the DROA was signed by Mr. Ferruglia, the DROA that we have as an exhibit, it was meant to commit him to purchase what?
That exhibit J20 is 3206.
Not and the parking then?
What was the price in that, in J20?
I believe it was $28,000 or $29,000, something like
that. How could he purchase the parking stalls for $28,000?
Well, in that particular DROA, he was only purchasing 3206. There was no lease fee interest to the parking.
So
the parking stalls were attached to that lease fee interest.
The parking stalls were pertinent to 3206.
Right.
They had no separate.
But he didn't add the $28,000 and the $459,000 and say, I'm buying all of this for three.
Well,
because the parking stalls, they had a value of four or something, right?
I think, Your Honor, to address that question specifically, I don't believe that the DROA set forth the price. It just referred to Exhibit A. Now, Mr. Ferruglia testified at trial that he was willing to pay the $28,000 and the $400,000. From my point of view, as a technical matter, the only lease fee that was available was $3,206. But yes, he was willing to pay the $28,000 and the $400,000.
That wasn't Justice McKenna's question, though. I think her question was, when he signed the DROA, he was anticipating that he was just purchasing $3,206. Is that right? Not purchasing the 106 parking stalls.
I don't know that that was ever clarified.
Well, the parking stalls are pertinent to the lease fee interest in 3206, so there are certain condos sometimes that have more than one parking stall. And so I would assume that each parking stall would have a separate price or something that in other words, there really was never a written contract for the 3206 plus the 106 parking stalls, correct?
I think, Judge, it's important to understand that this is different from the typical case where you might have parking lots for sale. Here, what was for sale was the leased fee interest to the land. The parking was appurtenant to the unit, like a lanai. A lanai has no interest in the common element, the land, only the apartment. If you look at the declaration, the common interest, including the land, that is assigned to the unit owners. All of the unit owners, you add them all up, it's 100%. There's nothing for the parking. The parking does not own any interest in the common element, which is the land.
Right, but it's attached to the unit, so the contract would have to include the price of the parking.
That's right. That's why I
said. But there's no signed contract including the price of the parking.
Well, including that $400,000, there is a contract signed that includes the parking. That's
okay.
The 3206, because the parking goes with it. And that's why the lawyer for the association later said, when we figured that out, we refused to sell 3206 to you.
For $28,000. You signed it for $28,000 or
not for any price. They were unwilling to sell it at any price. They wanted
Saying, what did your client insert as the price when they filled out the DROA?
There was no space for an insertion. There was just an exhibit.
Well, what was he intending? What did he expect he was paying?
Mr.
Committing
Ferruglia
himself
was
to
intending to pay the entire thing, the $400,000 and the $28,000. That's what he was intending to pay.
How did he know what the price was if it was never put on the DROA?
It was put on the DROA. That was the printed part, which Justice Wilson referred to. I think it's Exhibit A. Exhibit A.
Yeah.
The DROA refers to Exhibit A, and it talks about 06 units, 07 units, and gives a price. In answer to Justice McKinney's question, the exact price of 3206 was $28,756.85.
You know, in light of the confusion or lack of clarity, how can you say that the finding that there was no meeting of minds between the Furuyas and the AOAO as to the purchase of the leased fee interest and the appurtenant 106 stalls, how can you say that that's clearly erroneous?
What's clearly erroneous is that there was an offer. What the trial court said is that there was an offer. Where's the offer? This is the only thing we have. Well, there are those other things that we referred to that were not offers. If I can go forward.
What do you characterize that as? It's not an offer. What do you characterize it as, the DROA?
I would characterize it as an offer. Now, the ICA said it's not an offer. But the ICA knew, the trial court knew that it had to make the offer, given what I read you at the meeting. In fact, there's numerous things in the record that they said. The fee will then be offered first to the lessee, then to any other association member, and finally to a third party. They sent out a list of frequently asked questions, and I'll quote it exactly. What if I do not purchase my fee interest now, but decide to do so at a later date? You will have to pay 10% per year extra, and the board will make every effort to divest the association of the remainder lease fee interest and complete this within 2 years of the closing date. The association will not remain a lessor. If you do not purchase your fee interest within 12 months, the board will offer and sell your lease fee interest to a Pacific Monarch owner, and if there are remaining fee interest, to third-party interests. They also said to get the ratification that they needed a 75% ratification after they got the amendment. The association wrote the owners, and they said only 25% of the 75% have approved, quote, and that if we do not satisfy the contingencies, no one will be able to purchase their fee interest. So my question, where's the offer? If the DROA is not the offer, where's the offer?
Your client do? 6 years they didn't put the money in? Isn't that up to 2003? Nobody puts in any money to purchase this. Your client was going to purchase this, according to you, right?
The client intended to purchase it. That's correct.
And for 6 years, nothing happens. Title guarantee finally is frustrated, and they send a letter. I mean, you know, time necessarily isn't always of the essence on these kind of situations. But 6 years, and your client never deposits any money, and the association says starts charging people, including your client, and you folks go along with it, and there's no objection because the AOAO is purchasing it, and your client all that time is participating in the payment?
Well,
I mean,
I'm glad you raised that point. Time is of the essence. Time is of the essence of what? A contract. They refused to acknowledge that there was a contract. There's all this talk.
When did they get the 75%?
Pardon me?
When did they get the 75%?
They got the 75%. I think that was shortly before they purchased the fee, which was in December of 1996.
Okay. Question, procedural question.
Yes.
Your claims here, I mean, your breach of contract claims were actually dismissed per Rule 41, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then there's that temporary remand for the findings.
Yes.
Okay. And so after, and it's really a Rule 52 motion for judgment on partial findings, correct? It's after you've presented all of your evidence. I mean, this isn't really a 50-41 dismissal, is it? It's really a 52, isn't it?
I remember. We argued that it wasn't correctly ruled. I didn't see how long that had been on.
It's been a couple of minutes, okay. But you know, if you'd like to answer this question, then we can move on unless there are further questions.
I believe it's not correctly under Rule 41. It's similar to Rule 41.
So, but we're just reviewing this just the same way. Findings of fact clearly erroneous, conclusions of law right, wrong.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Can I, in line with that, ask you your view with respect to this finding of fact that you are contending, I believe, is erroneous? 14 says the DROA was not an agreement for the sale of the leased fee interests in the 106 parking stalls. It says the DROA was not an agreement for the sale of the leased fee interest in the 106 parking stalls. You've said that it's your position, your client's intent when signing this DROA was to obtain 3206 and the parking stalls as well, correct?
His intent was, he's not a lawyer, but his intent was to purchase 3206 and the appurtenant parking stalls, and he was willing to pay the $400,000 plus the $28,000.
How is the trial judge clearly erroneous?
On this finding of fact 14, how would you say the judge was clearly erroneous?
Because he later finds that there's no contract. He first found that there was an offer, then he finds that there's no contract.
Right.
My contention with the trial court was his finding that an offer was made. If an offer was made, the only offer that could have been made was the DROA, which my client signed and sent back to them.
Well, given that argument, are you saying that the DROA was an agreement?
If it was an offer, then yes, because...
Well,
because
I know you put an if in there. I'm just interested in your position. Are you asking this court to find that this was clearly erroneous, that the DROA was not an agreement, and to find that it was an agreement?
It's the combination between the two. You can't have it both ways. His finding that an offer was made and his finding that it's not a contract, you can't have that. If there was an offer, then there was a contract because Mr. Faruya accepted that offer. If there wasn't an offer, if that DROA is not an offer, then there is no contract.
It was actually an offer to entertain an offer, was it not? Because there's no way that the association could have accepted unless and until it actually had a 75%. They weren't just going to accept your offer. What if they didn't get to the 75%? And they had of course it was a condition subsequent, I guess, because the Exhibit B does say that unless they get 75%, it's canceled.
Well, they had the 75% at that time. In fact, the back of the DROA says that they're going to sign it and send it back to you. We're going to send you back three executed copies. So
did
yes.
you get that?
Pardon me?
Did you get that?
Yeah, it went to escrow, but not signed. But it still went. So my position simply is the two findings are inconsistent. Either you have an offer, and then Mr. Faruya's acceptance of that makes it a contract. If that's not, if Mr. Faruya makes an offer, then the association has never made the offer, and they're required to make an offer by the documents that I just read. You can't have a case where the association can buy the fee, tell the people, you vote for this, you ratify this, we'll offer you the fee, and then they never do it.
Did they have a problem with any other unit other than yours with 106 parking stalls?
No, because I think what happened was they recognized that they didn't want to sell that to Mr. Faruya.
But the court found differently. The court heard people testify, looked at the letters that were written, and found that your client changed his mind.
Well, I would like to, what the court found was two inconsistent things. He said that they offered, and then what they did was the association treated it as no contract. So how can my client change his mind when the association refused to acknowledge that there was a contract?
But even if the court had found the contract, that your client isn't ready, willing, and able to perform, and it certainly doesn't appear that your client put a dollar in there, and we have people writing letters as early as January 1997 specifically saying, and there are more than one letter saying your client changed his mind. And then not only that, Centurion, his realty agent, is trying to sell his leased interest. And according to your client, who the judge doesn't believe, He says he didn't know anything about it. He wasn't authorized. And the judge doesn't find that credible.
Well, that doesn't address the point. How do you fund an escrow? How do you fulfill the terms in an escrow when they're saying that the DROA is not a contract? What contract is it that my client is supposed to perform?
So, Mr. Van Buren, how do you respond to the point that seemed to be important to the circuit court that merely putting $1,000 in escrow doesn't really show, as Justice Pollack was suggesting, that he's ready and willing and able to move forward, and then the subsequent activity in this case that took place over the years would support the proposition that Mr. Ferruia wasn't ready, willing, and able to participate in this agreement?
No. I think you put the rabbit in the hat. Ready to participate in this agreement. What agreement? You can't have it both ways. You keep saying this agreement, but yet the DROA is not a contract.
But if there's no agreement, which you seem to be arguing, then you're basically acknowledging that there was no obligation of the AOAO to sell it to your client.
No, that's what the trial court said. The trial court said an offer was made, but there's no contract because the DROA wasn't signed. Well, the DROA was signed by the Ferruia, so that must mean there's no offer. So if there's no offer, my point is they have to make an offer. The association can't buy the fee and keep it for themselves.
So you're saying that they are you saying they did make an offer? Are you saying that the AOAO did make an offer?
What I'm saying
is, when they did the DROA,
I think you could look at it that the AOAO did not make an offer, and if they did not make an offer, they have to make it now. If you say that they did make an offer, then you have a contract.
Well,
because he signed it, and they refused to close that contract.
In a sense, they made an offer. They sold it to all the other condominium owners. Isn't that what they did? I mean, everybody purchased it. Everybody purchased their percentage. They added on a certain amount per month, including your client paid for it. So they did divest themselves of it.
No, that's absolutely what they did not do, and that's what the ICA found. In fact, the ICA vacated the findings of the trial court that they made an offer because they knew. If they made an offer, since the firm you signed everything, you'd have to have a contract. But they wanted to say no contract. So no contract, they had to have no offer. That's what they did.
Yeah. And I will, because we've been, peppering you with questions, I will give you time to be able to respond to Mr. Tsukazaki's arguments as well as a brief reply. I will ask just to ensure that the bailiff, that the sheriffs will keep the front door to the building open after 4:30. Because we will be going after 4:30. It's a public proceeding, and the public needs to have access to the building. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. I would like to address first the argument regarding an offer and the finding by the trial court that there was no enforceable contract regarding purchase of the 106 parking stalls and even apartment unit 3206. The word offer is being thrown out haphazardly. The court made basically two findings about an offer. The association offered the opportunity to all the lessees to acquire their lease.
You know, with respect to the plaintiff's claims, again, I get back to the procedural issue. On a Rule 41 or a Rule 52, whatever this is, we do not view the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. The trial court is not required to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff if it's a judgment on partial findings, or are we just back to the same old standard of regular, clearly erroneous?
I believe in terms of the case coming to this court, it's just basically whether the findings are erroneous, clearly erroneous.
Okay, so 52 has totally changed the JNOV.
Well, Your Honor, in terms of how
it's no longer the JNOV standard.
Yeah, well,
at the end of the plaintiff's case.
I believe so, Your Honor, because when the case was decided by the trial court decided the motion for judgment based upon plaintiff's case.
Right, and in the past, we used to look at that as in the light most favorable to. But basically, this is a normal findings of fact, conclusions of law. Right?
Correct.
With nothing, no just weighing the evidence the way evidence would be viewed at the end of the trial.
Because it came that way because of the remand by the ICA back to the
right.
Court.
But at the end of the, after the plaintiff's case, so there was no evidence on the issue of offer and acceptance?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So it was only as to your claims then?
Correct, Your Honor.
Your counterclaim on the parking lot and what happens in terms of the rental and stuff?
Correct, Your Honor.
That was the rest of the trial?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Sukazaki, you were making the point about how there really wasn't a contract. And can you tell me what the DROA was, especially after it was signed by Mr. Ferruglia?
That's the second part, yes, Justice Wilson. That was the second part of the trial court's ruling, that the DROA was an offer by its terms from the Ferruglias to the association regarding the purchase of a lease fee interest. Okay. So that DROA as a form document went to all lessees to fill out for the purchase of their lease fee interest. Mr. Ferruglia did submit two DROs back, DROAs back, one for 3207, one for 3206. That DROA by its terms is an offer. But what happened was, when he submitted that back to the association, he informed the association that he did not want to acquire the lease fee interest or the interest in the parking stalls. Now, the parking stalls are pertinent to the unit. So his decision not to acquire the lease fee interest basically put a hold on everything.
Okay.
And in fact,
if I could interrupt you, because that factual assertion certainly is an important one. You're saying that after he signed the DROA, Mr. Ferruglia then communicated to your client that he actually did not want to go through with it. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. And he did that at a time that was before your client indicated any interest in holding up on the completion of the DROA.
If Mr. Ferruglia, as the evidence presented to the trial court, if Mr. Ferruglia had one, confirmed his interest in acquiring the lease fee interest to his unit and the 106 parking stalls, paying the $28,000 for his unit and the $460,000 for the parking stalls, he would have acquired it. But before closing, and well in advance before closing, he informed the association that not only did he not want to buy the lease fee interest in his parking stalls or the interest in his parking stalls, but he wanted to sell the interest to the association. There are two exhibits.
All right, so this is after he signed the DROA and before any closing, he communicated this information to your client.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what evidence in the record is there of that?
Your Honor, there was testimony through deposition testimony submitted by Cesar Payette, by the president of the association, through deposition transcript designations. There was testimony by Mr. Ferruglia himself. There was testimony by Mr. Ferruglia's broker.
All right. I'd be interested in,
Jason.
I suppose at some point you could help me with that. But I did look at some of the depositions, particularly Mr. Payette, and it appears that in Mr. Payette's deposition, he confirmed that Mr. Ferruglia was told it wasn't necessary to have a separate DROA. So the meetings of the mind, as far as the deposition of Mr. Payette was concerned, from what I could see, was that he said, showing you exhibit 13. This is a letter to Mr. Ferruglia from escrow. May have gone directly to escrow now. I note the cover letter was at the practice of escrow to copy when you have an escrow. Process the owners went through. Can you recall? Let me see. Mr. Ferruglia sent this contract in with his check. He had signed a contract to buy 3206 with the parking stalls. So that was the understanding of Mr. Payette, who I guess was a representative at that time, a consultant to your client?
That's correct.
So after the contract was sent in with the check, the understanding was that the purchase was for the parking stalls. And then it says, that's my belief, yes. Now, we are all here because that contract didn't close. Can you tell me why? Answer, nothing happened. And that was, it says, did you ever tell that he couldn't do that? That is, that he would have to pay for the least fee interest for 3206 and the 400 some odd thousand for the parking stalls. And it, and then it says, my recollection is he decided not to buy the stalls, but it appears that the understanding when he signed it was that he was planning on purchasing the parking stalls.
At that moment in time, when the association received the DROA, which is the offer from the Ferruias, the association expected to close on the sale of the lease fee interest to all the lessees who expressed an interest to acquire. The parking stalls were unique. They're a component of the building that is attached to that particular unit, 3206.
Are there additional parking stalls, by the way?
No, Your Honor.
So this is
This is it. It's 106 stalls. And so they're all attached to that unit.
And okay. At that point, Mr. Van Buren's point, I think, is that the your client, the AOAO, realized that actually it may be a problem with the DROA, because by completing the DROA, Mr. Ferruia will be able to get all the parking stalls along with the unit.
The timing of that argument is inaccurate. The assessment regarding the unit and the parking stalls came after Mr. Ferruia offered the association the opportunity to acquire what he called the leasehold interest in the 106 parking stalls.
What was that? You mentioned that before. He didn't want to buy the parking stalls, but he wanted to sell
That's
the
correct.
Leasehold interest?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What was left on the leasehold interest?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What was left on it?
40 years, right?
At that moment in time, to 1996, 50. Be about 50 plus years. And with respect to that stalls, there Justice McKenna's question regarding the valuation, there was an appraisal done by John Childs and Company. And when they did the appraisal prior to going out to all the owners and setting those values in Exhibit 2 to the DROA, I mean, Exhibit A to the DROA, they valued the stalls as a separate component. And in fact, it was important because the association had to fund the purchase for that interest. And because Mr. Ferruia declined to buy it, the association would come up out of its own reserves to fund that interest to keep the stalls. They assessed all the owners for that interest, and every owner paid, even Mr. Ferruia, over a two-year period for the association's right for those stalls.
He never objected to say, hey, I was supposed to buy these stalls. There's nothing like that in the record, right?
Correct, Justice Powell. That's correct. And in fact, the trial court specifically found so, that he did so without any objection. Going back to the question regarding the DROA and what it comprised, and the subsequent decision regarding whether or not you could sell the parking without the unit, that analysis came after Mr. Fu informed the board by two offers, written offers, from his real estate broker, who acknowledged and testified in his deposition transcript that's submitted as a designation to the trial court, that Mr. Ferruia had reviewed the offer, had approved the offer, and authorized its issuance to the board. So at the moment in time when he offered the association the right to acquire, to purchase the lease fee interest.
When was that?
That was in October 29th, 1996, and November 15th, 1996.
So
separate offers.
And that was after the DROA?
After the DROA, that's correct.
Okay, so assuming that Mr. Ferruia changed his mind and decided he was going to negotiate to sell the parking stalls, and assuming that that took place after he signed the DROA, which in his view would have been an offer, then how do you evaluate the validity of the contract up to the time when he changed his mind? Are you saying that there was a contract at the time he signed it and somehow it changed, or?
There was no contract.
Did you sign, the association sign the offer that he submitted for 3207?
No, Your Honor.
So they didn't sign anything. So they treated everything as a contract, even if it was not signed then.
It treated it as an offer. It would not be accepted until there was proper funding into escrow of all the monies that
were necessary. So the association never signed the contract for 3207?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But it was treated as a contract?
It was treated as a contract that had not been accepted, that was not in binding enforceable contract.
I think Justice Justice McKenna referred to 3207. I think she's asking.
No, I'm asking about 3207. What about all the other offers from all the other? Yeah.
3207, Mr. Fruita did fund the $28,000.
Did your association sign it?
The association signed the contract.
Signed it. Okay. So everybody else, you guys signed it.
He allowed to close and acquired at least fee interest to that.
Okay.
Year.
But so
doesn't Justice McKenna's question make the point about how a determination whether there's a valid contract doesn't necessarily just depend on a signing, correct? I mean, we have case law, the Jorgensen versus Mark case, where you have a contract that's entered into without necessarily a signature, where there's just a meeting of the minds. So if you have a process underway where all the tenants, because of the prior correspondence from the association, all the tenants understand that when they sign this offer, it's their contract to purchase it, wouldn't that practice indicate that in this case that's what was anticipated by Mr. Freud and the actual signature?
Did you raise statute of frauds as a defense in your answer?
I believe we did, Your Honor. My answer is right here, but I can check it on a break as counsel re-argues. But the point to address Justice Wilson's question, if there was evidence in the record that the association engaged in certain activity regarding 3206 and the 106 parking stalls that would affirm a binding contract, which is partial performance, representations, so forth, at that time, then arguably one could say that the DROA and all of that activity and all that partial performance by the association might have created a binding contract without signature. But that's not the case here.
Well, let me give you an example. Mr. Dozier, is he a...
At the time, he was a board member and president.
He's a member of AOAO, right?
In
his deposition, he said, at the time the AOAO offered the Furuyas an opportunity to purchase the unit and the parking stalls, the Furuyas indicated they wanted to purchase the fee for both of the units and the parking stalls. So the idea of defining what the intent of the parties were at the time that this paperwork was finally generated seems to me to be an idea that can be defined from the point of view of a representative of the AOAO. And I'm still reaching for the evidence that would suggest that prior to the time that this, as Mr. Van Buren characterized it, offer was made, and prior to the time that the offer was signed by the Furuyas, there was some indication that Mr. Furuya actually didn't want to buy the parking stalls.
Prior to the execution of the DROA, there's no evidence in the record that he changed his mind prior to his execution of the DROA.
All right, so you're just talking about after he signed the DROA. That's the point at which you understand he changed his mind.
That's correct, Your Honor. And it's an important fact in terms of timing, Your Honor. It is also the time before the closing, before everybody closed in December of 1996 on the acquisition of the lease fee purchase. In that period of time, from the signing of the DROA to the time of closing in December, he submitted two written offers and engaged in discussions with the association about selling the parking stalls to the association.
Okay.
It should also be noted that at that time, after the closing, it was this question about the separation of the interest and about whether or not you can separate. That's when the question came up regarding can you separate the parking stalls from the unit itself. And that's when, in dealing with your question, Justin Wilson, that's when the association was looking at that issue, in early 1997.
Well,
it didn't come up at any point in time prior to that.
Can I ask a question with respect to your counterclaim?
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, so I understand that per the declaration, there's nothing as to rent for the parking stalls after September of 2014, is it?
April
of 2014. Okay, so there's no rent being paid now, is that correct?
Excuse me?
There's no rent being paid for the parking stalls right now?
That's correct.
Okay, so question. pursuant to the declaration, there's also provision that says, and I think it's on page nine of the declaration, all other costs of every description pertaining to the parking elements, which is, quote, parking expenses, including but not limited to the cost of maintenance, repair and replacement, the making of any additions and improvements, and the cost of administering and operating, including the cost of any security arrangements, the cost of utility services, and the cost of insuring, shall be charged to and borne by the owners of the apartments to which the parking stalls are pertinent. Each such apartment owner shall be responsible for 1/106 of the parking expenses for each stall appurtenant to his apartment. So I'm just wondering how that's being addressed now, if it's not through rent.
Mr. Furia still maintains and is still responsible.
So he's doing it himself.
The maintenance expenses.
Okay, so he kind of does this as a parking thing himself.
Well, Your Honor, there are expenses. My understanding is there are expenses incurred by the association that are being passed on to Mr. Furia.
There are.
In terms of maintaining the parking elements.
Okay.
So, you know, and he's paid in the past, so that's not an unusual thing.
In addition to the rent?
In addition to the rent, that's correct.
Right.
Since the court has brought up the argument that the association has made in its application to this court, I would like to address that at this time.
Can I ask you a question, too? And then you could maybe perhaps address that question when you, in other words, it's about your counterclaim.
Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to know what your interpretation, I'm looking at the judgment in this case, and the judgment says plaintiffs are not obligated to pay additional rent, and it has additional rent in quotation marks, arising from their ownership of the 106 parking stalls to the association under Section 4, 1A of the conveyance document after April 26, 2014.
Yes.
Okay. Judge Nakamura at the ICA said something about quantum merit or something, you know, that wasn't raised. But my question to you is, does this seems to only say that you're not obligated, the plaintiffs aren't obligated under the specific term of the conveyance document. But it doesn't talk about anything about excluding payment outside of that document. In other words, under some other unjust enrichment or quantum merit.
Yes, Your Honor. In 2006, when Mr. Furio filed his complaint, he was paying additional rent for the 106 parking stalls. He was in compliance with his contract. At that moment in time, there is no unjust enrichment claim that could have been brought. There is no conferred benefit. There is nothing that would be unjust at that point because he is paying.
So does that mean you're not precluded from filing another lawsuit for unjust enrichment at this time?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Based upon not only just the IC rulings, but if you looked at the doctrines of collateral estoppel or res judicata, that particular issue was not adjudicated before the trial court. In fact, it could not have been brought because the claim was not ripe at any point in time until April 26, 2014, and might not have been ripe if the trial court had found an obligation to pay lease rent under the particular condominium conveyance document. With respect to the obligation to pay lease rent, the trial court and the ICA found and relied upon four erroneous findings. The first one was that the parking stall has no percentage of common interest. The second one was that because it has no percentage of common interest, the rent renegotiation provision 1.E of the CCD could not be applicable because the end product would be zero. The third was that the trial court speculated as to what the developer intended, and that the developer intended by removing the parking stalls from a parking apartment that had a percentage of common interest into the apartment unit 3206, that the developer wanted to save on maintenance expenses. And the fourth item that was an error was that there's no language in the CCD that says Mr. Furia shall, the department owner, shall pay for additional rent for the parking stalls after April 26, 2014. If I take one at a time, the final horizontal property regime report, where the developer had decided to move the parking stalls into the unit, expressly makes notion that the apartment owner or the lessee will pay additional rent for those parking stalls. There's nothing in that report that says rent cuts off after 2014.
But the provision, we look at this contract, and it's the conveyance document, and it has additional rent and a separate provision. And what's very, very interesting is it doesn't even cut off after 10-year intervals. It's really interesting. It has 10-year intervals, and then it cuts off at the 5-year interval. So it makes your argument, to me, more challenging. Well,
thank you, Your Honor. In touching on that point, the trial court found there's no language in the CCD that says the apartment owner shall pay additional rent after 2014 for the parking stalls. There are also no such language in the CCD that says the apartment owner shall pay additional rent for the apartment unit after April 26, 2014. Basically, when you look at the provisions, and you look at provision section 1, capital A, it ends after the first three 10-year terms and the 5-year term, which is interesting, that it says payable with the rent for required in section 1 above. And that is section 1 above is the rent for the apartment unit.
Right.
There's, again, nothing in the CCD that says the rent for the apartment unit continues after 2014. But we all understand, and there's no argument before the trial court or the IC or anybody, regarding the obligation of the apartment owner to pay rent for the apartment unit. We all understand that. And it is subject to section 1.E, the rent renegotiation provision.
Well, then, you're suggesting that we should take paragraph 1A and interpret it to mean that the rent for the parking spaces will continue indefinitely, or at least until the end of the lease, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so what happens after the 5 years?
Well, after the 5 years.
In other words, after 2014, what's the payment supposed to be? That was part of the concern of the ICA, right? How do you calculate?
That's correct. The ICA took the finding that there's no percentage of common interest and applied that into the rent renegotiation provision. But the rent renegotiation provision does not say that the proportional share of the apartment owner is based upon the percentage of common interest. All it says is undivided interest in land. At that moment in time, after the 5 years are up, based upon the obligation to pay additional rent for the parking stalls, either Mr. Furuya and the association would have negotiated what that amount would have been, or if they could not come to an agreement under the rent renegotiation provision, it would have gone to some arbitration for the arbitrator to hear all these arguments and to make that decision.
Well, that's, I guess, one way you could
What is the then percentage undivided interest in the land mean?
That would be for the parties to negotiate and to figure out, and also for the arbitrator to determine. Throughout the condominium gains document, the phrases percentage of common interest, percentage of common elements are distinct terms. Also distinct is the phrase undivided interest in land. They do not mean the same thing throughout the conveyance document. And in fact, when you look at the rent, when you look at section 1, capital A, it says the apartment owner shall have additional use of the land, and that the cost of such use shall be divided by the undivided interest in the land. All of that language together would prove that the four findings by the ICA is inconsistent with the guidance that this court's provided in AmFac Waikiki Beachcomber. The interpretation that in 1979, a developer who has a motivation to save money by eliminating maintenance expenses would decide that in 35 years, he was going to give up the right to lease rent for the remaining 40 years would seem to be inconsistent with a reasonable interpretation of the CCD as to that obligation. Very quickly, on the last part of the association's arguments in its petition is regarding the trial court's finding that held, a decision that held, the association was not liable to the Furuyas for the two parking stalls assigned to the laundry facilities, which was reversed by the ICA as to damages that incurred after Mr. Furuya filed his complaint in 2006. I would like to note that the ICA did not find any of the facts to be erroneous. And in fact, the trial court, in assessing credibility, looking at the evidence, weighed a number of facts that would support its ruling that it was in favor of the association, that it should not pay for damages even after the complaint. Those facts are: the association relied upon the use of those stalls, invested money and resources. Mr. Furuya benefited from the use even after the complaint was filed because he utilized the housekeeping services which those facilities supported. Third, he restriped and renumbered the parking stalls to account for the two stalls assigned to the laundry stalls. 106 stalls were remarked to 97, 9 stalls, 5 for the ADA stalls, which he agreed to be assigned, 1 for a housekeeper that was reserved, 1 for the parking attendant station, and 2 for the laundry elements.
So he actually has 97 right now that he could use.
That he's numbered 97 that he could use, yes. The next fact, Your Honor, is that no time during the underlying case did he seek an injunction regarding the use of those two stalls. And based upon those facts, it was the right decision by the trial court to find that even after the complaint was filed, that he was not entitled to any damages on the claim of unjust enrichment. He was not unjustly enriched because the association was not unjustly enriched. Unjustly enriched by the use of those two stalls. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I just wanted to be clear. Is there any particular case law that you are relying upon with respect to your position that once a party objects to the other's behavior, in this case, estoppel by acquiescence would no longer apply?
The unjust enrichment claim and the estoppel claim are equitable claims and defenses. And quick answer to the court, no, I don't have any particular case. But they are equitable defenses. And in that case, the court's weighing all the evidence that was presented to him and also the credibility of the parties.
Very well, thank you. I do want to just verify with the bailiff that our building is open. All right. Mr. Van Buren, reply and your response to the AOAO's CERDAP. Again, you ran out of all your time, but I guess at this point I'd say why don't we start with about 7 minutes for you, and we'll see if we can get it done in that period of time. If that doesn't get the job done, we'll see how things are going. But does that work for you, at least as an initial target?
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. You can do the 7 minutes? Great. Thank you.
Yeah. First, before I forget, answer to Judge McKenna's question.
But it's Justice McKenna. I know you're not doing that on purpose, okay. But if you would.
Sorry about that. The Justice McKenna, J-19 is the DROA for Unit 3207, J meaning joint exhibits.
Right.
And that was not signed by the association either, and J-19 did close. So.
The 3206 did close?
3207.
Oh, 7.
Yes.
3206 never closed, right?
3206 never closed because they treated 3206 as never being a contract. Because
so you're saying that the DROAs were never signed by the association?
The only two DROAs I know about are 3207 and okay. 3206, and neither of those were signed.
Okay. Mr. Van Buren, what do you say about Mr. Tsukazaki's argument that it couldn't have been the intention of the parties that nobody paid, that a party not pay lease rent after 2014 for the rest of the term of the lease?
Okay. Let me address that argument. And by the way, let me preface that by saying that this condominium conveyance document and the condominium documents in general, not the amendment, but the condominium documents in general and the condominium conveyance document, were drafted by Bernice Lippman. And I've been through these documents with a fine-tooth comb. Believe me, she did an excellent job. And that condominium conveyance document makes perfect sense. And I'll tell you why it makes perfect sense and why there shouldn't be any additional rent after 2014. There are two reasons. One is in 2014, the lease, let's assume that there was never any fee purchase in this case. That confuses it a little bit, but it doesn't affect the analysis. In 2014, the let me step back. When you do a condominium conveyance document, the developer can provide various lease rents to whatever he wants. He can take a sandwich, which was very prevalent in this community at that time. But in any event, in 2014,
I don't know what you mean by that. He can take a sandwich.
He could take more under the condominium conveyance document than he under all the condominium conveyance documents than he was remitting to the fee owner. Now, in 2014, the lease renegotiates to fair market value. So 100% of the lease is going to be paid. And who pays the 100% of that lease? 100% of that lease gets paid by the unit owners because the unit owners own 100% of the common element, which is the land. So in 2014, any additional beyond that 100% would be a windfall to the lessor. So Bernice knew exactly what she was doing by cutting that off in 2014. There's a second reason.
Is that's in the record, I assume?
Yeah, they deposed Bernice. The second in the condominium conveyance document is in the record. The second thing is it's important to understand what a condominium conveyance document is. A condominium conveyance document is not an assignment of lease. It's not an apartment lease. A condominium conveyance document includes two components: a building conveyance in fee, and only the land is leased. The parking in this case, if you look at the condominium conveyance document, the parking is included in the building conveyance. That is conveyed in fee. So this idea...
Well, where's that?
The condominium conveyance is Exhibit J3, and it's Roman numeral 1, the building conveyance under that, and it talks about that. We sell, convey, transfer, set over. That's a fee simple conveyance, and that includes the apartment and the parking. Now,
where's the parking? Oh, yes, okay.
Okay, and then when you get down to 2, that's the ground conveyance. The developer hereby leases, rents. That's the land. So this idea of unjust enrichment, that's a non sequitur. There is no unjust enrichment. He sold the parking. The developer sold the parking in fee to the apartment owner. The only thing left, the only thing that the lessor retained was the land. And the parking has nothing to do with the land. So that the ICA got that completely correct. Judge Nakamura's consent on that unjust enrichment was wrong. There is no unjust enrichment here, and there can't be, because he had already conveyed the parking. That's what a condominium conveyance document is.
So Section 4 on the apartment owner's conveyance that the other council relied upon, what is that covering?
So you're saying you don't owe any additional rent for your unit?
After 2014.
Even for the building portion?
No, for the building portion, yes, you would, because it sets forth that. The document sets forth that. You lease. It's not for the building portion, actually. It's for the land. I don't think I answered your question entirely correctly. There is still lease rent paid, but it's for the land, not for the building.
Or the parking stalls.
Parking stalls are included with the building. That's part of Roman numeral 1, the building right. conveyance. That's what a condominium conveyance document is. That's why they used it. And the reason they used it for those historical basis is the IRS treated, if they did it in this, as an assignment lease, the IRS treated it as all prepaid rent. So the developers came up with this idea, we'd sell the building in fee, and then we'd have this lease rent, we'd have capital gain for it. But anyway.
Well, where does it say fee?
Pardon me? That's part 1, the building conveyance.
It says you convey the apartment.
You got to go all the way down to the next page. To have and to hold the same under the apartment owner forever. You see that on page 3? Now that's under the building conveyance, to have and to hold the same unto the apartment owner forever.
Where does it say forever? Forever.
Yeah. And then down below you get to the ground conveyance. That's leased. That's the land, not the building. Okay.
So what is the lease rent for? The ground conveyance?
That's correct. The lease rent is for the land, not for the building.
I'll allow you to go a little bit further, but you know, I guess you know, certainly address your response to the arguments raised on their CERT app, and then a brief reply with regard to yours.
Thank you. And the I don't believe there was ever any finding that he said in this the loose talk was that the Furuyas, when they submitted the DROA, said, "Oh, we don't want to purchase this." Why would they have submitted the DROA if that were the case? Moreover, to the extent that the DROA is a contract, if you look at the special terms, it says on it, paragraph 12.
So you're saying that the judge was clearly erroneous for finding otherwise?
For finding that
he found that you, soon after the DROA, you offered to sell the parking. Your client offered to sell the parking stalls.
He did say that. And
so he was clearly erroneous.
Not on that, but so what? To me that's a non sequitur. The DROA, to the extent it's a contract, if we agree that's a contract, it says. And let me read from paragraph 12. Really, it's only the last sentence. This sales agreement constitutes the entire agreement. No variation or amendment of this sales contract shall be valid or enforceable without written approval by the association and the buyer. There's no such document. There's talk that they were refusing to close with Mr. Furuya. He's trying to be a decent guy on this thing, and then they use it against it. But if this is a contract, it was never amended. Never.
You're referring to the DROA at this point?
The DROA, that's correct.
Paragraph?
Pardon me?
What paragraph number?
That's J20, the exhibit, paragraph 12. It's exhibit B, additional terms, paragraph 12.
And so your position is that the fact that Mr. Furuya decided that he was going to enter into negotiations for the sale of the parking stalls is not relevant to a determination about whether there was a valid contract?
That's correct. It isn't. By its own terms, it isn't. And I still haven't heard, by the way, where it was that if the association made an offer, where's the offer? I still haven't seen it. If the offer isn't the DROA, I want to know, where's the offer?
Doesn't, just to bring it back to the plain language of the DROA says that the offer is being made by the buyer, and then there's an acceptance, denominated as such, acceptance by the association, and that was never signed. So why not follow sort of the plain language of the document? Is it your contention the document is ambiguous, or that it means something different from what its apparent plain language would be?
I have two answers to that. One is that it's just like 3207. That wasn't signed either. So that was something they said. We gave it to them, and they said they'd send us back the executed copy. Instead, they apparently sent it to escrow. That's number one. Number two is assume that's correct, and it did require the association's signature, and it was an offer by the.
Is that a finding of the trial court?
What's that?
That the 3207 offer was not signed by the AOA. You're saying that it was signed, wasn't signed. They're saying that it was. I can't seem to find a finding.
I don't think he made a finding of it. It's a joint exhibit that was admitted in evidence. I don't believe there's a finding on it. I could be wrong, but I don't believe there is. But if you look at J19, you'll see that was not J19 with the DRA for 3207. That was not signed by the association.
What was J19 supposed to be?
J19 was the DRA for 3207.
In what form?
You mean
at the point you signed it, or I mean, how was it described? Is it described as the DROA that was in escrow?
That was another DROA. That one closed. Without any.
I'm just saying, what is J-19 supposed to be?
J-19 is the DRA for 3207 that was closed, that was treated as a contract, even though that was never signed by the association either.
Is there a finding on that? There
no,
is no finding on that.
I don't think okay. so. Just the.
Okay. Well, for whatever reason, the association went ahead with the transaction, even though it didn't sign that document. But coming back to this document, it's denominated offer, it's denominated acceptance, and the offer is to be signed by the buyer. Acceptance is to be signed by the AOAO. It was never signed. Putting aside their conduct in this other instance, why not interpret it by its plain terms, that there is an offer to purchase which was not on its face accepted?
I think it would be fair in some respects to treat it that way. But then you run into the problem, which the ICA recognized. Where's the offer then? Where's the offer from the Furuyas? Where's the offer from the association? To do that, you have to say, oh, the association can buy the fee, ignore all these promises that they made, and they never have to offer it to the Furuyas. That's my question. Where's the offer to the Furuyas? Or you can say that, I mean, that would be the end of our case, that the association can buy a fee, make all these promises, incorporate them in the amendment, ignore the statute, and ignore the legislative history, and say an association can buy the fee and they can keep it for themselves, they can speculate, they can do whatever they want. I would ask Mr. Tsukasaki to tell this court, where is the association's offer? If it's not the DROA.
And that's the statute, you're arguing that's something they're statutorily required to do?
Not only is it statutorily required, but it's required by the documents and by all their promises.
Right. Anything else just to wrap up on either your own application or with response to the AOAOs?
Well, just very briefly, you've been very generous, which is the last point about the parking stalls. The concept that an association can steal a apartment owner's property and use it and never have to pay for it, and even after a complaint is made, say, we still don't have to pay you. I mean, who is going to be charged with knowing whose property it is if not the association? To me, that argument is nothing short of preposterous.
Is each owner still paying $55 for the parking? For the special assessment, or did that stop?
Is my client paying for that?
Well, is everybody paying? Is anybody paying, including your client?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. You mean the $55 because the fee for 3206 was never sold to?
Right,
that your question?
Right. That's the question.
I don't know the answer to that. As far as I know, they are, but I really don't know.
And your client's not paying rent, right?
Paying rent for
the parking stalls.
He's paying rent for 3206, but
not for the parking stalls.
As
right?
I explained, as of 2014, there's no additional rent due, and nor should there be any additional rent due. But he is, as you point out, he has enormous maintenance obligations for the parking garage. It's built above. The units are built above the parking. He has enormous obligations to maintain that parking garage, and he does so.
Thank you very much. We'll hear now from Mr. Tsukasaki in reply in support of the AOAO's application.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. To correct the record, there is a finding in the December 2012 findings by the trial court regarding the closing of Unit 3207, and that finding is Finding 54. And Finding 54 provides that the closing documents for Apartment Unit 3207 were executed on or about December 13, 1996, and the deed was recorded on December 27, 1996. The exhibit J-19 is the form of the DROA that was returned by Mr. Furuya to the association. It's not the actual document that was submitted in closing, where all the documents were signed by the associate's representative.
Which finding is that, 55 or
54?
54 of the December 2012 findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Right, so you're saying there was a fully executed version? Is that what I just heard?
That's correct. That's the only way they could have closed. that in escrow all the documents are signed and they can close on each purchase. The form that we have is only the one that Mr. Fruitt submitted to the association when he expressed his interest to acquire 3207.
So, to be clear, your position is that all the tenants who signed the DROA did not have a contract when they signed it. They didn't have a contract until AOAO signed it.
That's correct. I mean, to complete a binding enforceable contract, when you had consideration paid, you had the money in escrow, and they could confirm it, yes. That was all signed in escrow in, I believe, multiple stages by the association.
It sounds like they may have ended up signing it. I'm just postulating the situation that if they hadn't signed it, from your point of view, if AO hadn't signed it, there still would not have been a binding contract. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And Mr. Fruitt, excuse me.
You're hearing the argument you did call it an offer. Didn't you call the DROA's offers?
It's an offer from Mr. Fruitt to the association for the association's acceptance.
Since when does an offer go into escrow? I've never heard of offers going into escrow.
Well,
it's DROA, it's contracts that go into escrow. So how can escrow be opened without an contract?
The acquisition, because we're talking about a number of lease fee interests from many, many lessees, the management of it is to open escrow with a $1,000 deposit, to put the documents escrow for the association to sign and close, to ensure that the money has been funded. Because again, for the same reason, the association is investing millions of dollars to acquire the lease fee interest in the property so that it can sell these interests to the lessees. They provide them the opportunity. They offered the opportunity for them to acquire it. And that's just the process that was created.
But doesn't your argument make the point of how important it is for those to actually be contracts so that AOAO can get it 75%, so AOAO can complete the closings?
Well, it was handled, that's correct, Your Honor, but also, Justice Wilson, in this particular instance, dealing with the parking stalls particularly, the association went out to get Mr. Fruitt's, to get an understanding of what his interest was in the parking stalls. So they contacted him in April of 1996, well in advance of even the DROAs going out, what his interest was. And when he expressed his interest, then if everything went all right, he funded escrow, he put in the $460,000 and the $28,000 for his unit, he would have acquired his interest in 1996. But the simple fact is, not only were written offers made, but he orally engaged the association in offering to sell them the parking stalls. At that moment in time, there was no agreement, there was no meeting of the minds in terms of closing on that deal. The offer just simply sat for Mr. Fruitt. It was never accepted by the association. Mr. Fruitt testified to that.
Well, other than the failure to sign by AOAO for the decision not to sign, what evidence is there that there wasn't a meeting of the mind? I mean, there were previous discussions. It clarified with Mr. Fruitt that he intended to pay for the stalls. It appears from the testimony of Mr. Payette that at the time that the DROA was submitted, that was the understanding. So what other than the fact that there wasn't a signature on the DROA would indicate that there wasn't a meeting of the minds about this being a contract?
Mr. Fruitt informed the association prior to closing that he was not going to acquire the lease, the interest in the parking stalls. He submitted two written offers, exhibits J21 and J23, to the association to sell the parking stalls.
Sell the lease?
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor. And with respect to that, at that moment in time, although he went ahead and closed on 3207, there's nothing in the record other than the self-serving testimony that comes out after the lawsuit that says, hey, I should have had a right to buy it under the DROA. In fact, there is a December, I believe it's J55, exhibit J55, which is this December 2003 letter from Mr. Fruitt back to the association expressing an interest to acquire the lease fee interest to the unit in the parking lot. At that point in time, he was offering all the money, plus more. But what was interesting in that letter is that he never said, I had a right to acquire it under the DROA. There's no mention of that at all. Because he understood, as he testified at trial, he pulled out so that the offer that he made by the DROA was never accepted, and that's what he testified to at trial.
Okay, in terms of your land, we're here on your rebuttal for your counterclaim, right? So in terms of your claim for rent, I just want to make sure I understand it. You're saying that you don't need any additional rental for the parking lot because it's based on his percentage interest in the undivided interest in the land?
I believe the argument made by Mr. Frullo's counsel is that the parking stalls have no percentage of common interest.
Right.
And therefore, the rent renegotiation provision 1.E of the CCD could not be applied because the end product with a zero percentage of common interest is zero.
Right.
Okay. The argument by the association is that it doesn't say proportional share of the percentage of common interest. It says proportional share is the percentage, is the undivided interest in land.
Then percentage undivided interest in the land. But when you go forward to two, it says that does hereby lease from developer an undivided interest equal to the apartment owner's common interest in the common elements.
That's correct. But it's also, there's no limiting factor in terms of defining undivided interest in land. In fact, throughout the CCD, the terms percentage of common interest, percentage of common elements are distinct terms, as well as the term, the phrase, undivided interest in land. In touching on Mr. Van Buren's argument regarding the building conveyance and the land conveyance, I would like
to
know.
So you're saying that under the renegotiation, since 3206 has 106 parking stalls, they would be allocated a much higher undivided interest in the land than the 5.1 or 5.2% current that would be the common elements interest.
That's correct. More than likely, at that moment in time, if the party sat down, they would probably have to revisit maybe the
So the rent renegotiation is still going on?
It's not going on at all, Your Honor, because Mr. Fleet denies an obligation or has taken the position that he has no obligation based upon the trial court's ruling to pay any rent, additional rent, for the parking stalls.
Yes, but I'm just saying for 2014 on. But with respect to the regular rent, it's renegotiation time, right?
I understand the association is in the process of the rent renegotiation and is working on that for the apartment units.
Mr. Tsukazaki, could you begin moving us towards a conclusion? I think your red light's been on for some time now, so I think we're pretty evened out in terms of giving both sides ample opportunity to raise their arguments. So if you would, please move us towards a resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. First, regarding the argument regarding building conveyance, land conveyance, I would like to note that under Mr. Van Buren's argument, if the building is a conveyance in fee, he was paying lease rent for that interest. Why would you pay lease rent if you own the property in fee? I would like to note also that argument that's being made about the building conveyance and what the land is and so forth are arguments being presented to this court and to the IC for the first time on this appeal. It was never raised before the trial court at all. Finally, on the last point, just to correct the record, Bernice Littman, when she testified, she was the only person from that time frame that could testify about the condominium conveyance document. And she recognized that regarding the additional rent for the parking stalls, it could be found particularly in some other place in the agreement, in the CCD. But when you look at the CCD and you look at how the parties placed 1. Capital A in that section, that CCD was a typewritten document where they took a form, the same form for Unit 3207, and they typed it out because they had to add that element in. And so they simply stuck it at the end. It's 1A, 2, 3, A, B, C, E, there's two E's, and F, and they stuck in 1A. And when you read that provision, and it says payable with the additional rent as provided in Section 1, we asked the court to conclude that meant that the rent renegotiation provision and 1.E also apply to the additional rent for the parking stalls. Thank you.
Is there anything further at this point?
No, you don't.
Okay, very well. Thanks to our attorneys on both sides for your argument. The court will take this matter under advisement.